Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. And Joan Pride is our guest, as you probably know, as you heard me mention earlier. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and she's simply the best. Joan, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. How are you?
I'm great. How's my charming act working so far?
Oh, it's brilliant, as always.
Yeah. Brilliant. I like that. I like like the beer commercial. Huh? Brilliant. Joan, what's going on in the world of Kiplinger these days?
Oh, well, I just finished reading the Wall Street Journal, and there's a little tear in my eye, and
oh, really?
I'm kind of sad.
What's wrong?
There's a story about Martha Stewart that would warm the cockles of your heart.
Okay.
It's all about how wonderful Martha's been to her fellow prisoners in prison.
Oh, she's just been loving them up and down.
Oh, gee. She's just an amazing woman. I had no idea.
You know what's interesting is I've never seen her on television as much as she has been since she's been on, you know what I mean, the reruns?
Well, my colleague told me about, I didn't see it, but in one of the papers there was a cartoon yesterday basically saying, I need to stay in prison to keep improving my image. Her image has never been better.
Right. Well, Americans are like that, aren't we? I mean, we sort of glom on to people like that, don't we? That we, if we kind of feel like they become a little bit of an underdog?
Boy, I'll say we love the underdog.
So maybe I need to go. No, I'm not going to say that because I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. So what's Wall Street Journal saying about Martha?
Well, what happened was while she was in prison, as she has been in prison, she has been writing to a Wall Street Journal reporter about her time in prison. So the reporter took those letters and also interviewed some of the inmates to find out just, you know, she's been sponsoring yoga lessons and helping in the basket weaving class. And
why isn't this a Vanity Fair piece instead of a Wall Street Journal?
That would be my question
as
well.
This is an odd location for that kind of writing, isn't it?
It is. But I give top points to Martha Stewart's PR person. Person is, they are brilliant.
So is she reforming women's prisons while she's in there? Is that what's
she's happening? She's trying to. That's exactly it, because she's complaining about the food and the there's no educational materials, and it's hard for, in this particular prison, it's hard for families to get there to visit, and she's got a lot of complaints. So she's kind of becoming the spokesperson for all these prisoners.
I think the education is important. I think the visitation is important.
Right.
But the food, it is prison after all.
That's true.
You know,
yeah, and they don't have cable TV either.
This is not supposed to be a resort environment
right.
Here. This is prison. Somebody, you've done something you shouldn't have done.
That's right.
This is a form of our punishment system in America.
That's kind of what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll have to read that. I'll get my journal today, and I look forward to reading that. Joan, Medicare, according to the folks at Kiplinger, is in bad shape. Tell us about this.
Right, and this is interesting, particularly in light of Federal Reserve Chairman Greenspan's testimony yesterday, because his message was, you've got to take all these entitlement programs and do something about them as soon as possible, because they're just draining the federal treasury. And so, as we know, it's only going to get worse.
Right.
And I think the reason we focused on Medicare is just because even though there is a lot of talk about, and rightfully so, that Social Security needs to be reformed, Medicare also needs to be reformed as well, particularly with all the baby boomers getting ready to retire. But what we're saying is that it's going to take Congress a while to get the reforms in Medicare going.
Many people are saying, especially the opponents of privatizing Social Security, many people are saying that Medicare is what needs to be worked on first rather than Social Security.
I have heard that. That's right.
But isn't Medicare a bigger problem than Social Security?
Well, that I've also heard that as well. I think the Medicare trust fund runs dry sooner.
Right.
And I think the concern is the you know, Social Security is a problem in terms of not having enough to pay people, but with Medicare, it's sort of like all bets are off, or there seems to be no limit on the draining of the Treasury, just because you could have a lot of older folks with a lot of health problems really getting into the system and creating a really big IOU for the government.
But, Joan, it seems to me that the issue is not as much which one is in the worst shape, as much as in the how do we fix either one of them, and that is we have to make reforms. And if we
right.
have to make reforms, which is, means it's going to be painful.
Well, reform, I think the reason that people
let
are...
Let me just finish this one point. Reform means painful. Shouldn't we tackle the one that's going to be the least painful and get a little bit of practice at reforming before we take on the biggie? So now I'm through.
Well, I would disagree with you, just because I think the reason that people are saying, hey, Medicare is in worse shape, is because all the discussion initially was about Social Security. And maybe the discussion wasn't framed properly by whoever started it. But to talk about Social Security without really talking about Medicare, I think was a mistake. And maybe that was the way to have presented it, was to say, look, we know we've got both to deal with. Mm-hmm. Let's do the easier one first, get that out of the way, and then really get our teeth into the Medicare problem.
See what happens when the White House doesn't talk to me, Joan.
I agree. I don't
See,
know what
I just gave
is.
Them the plan, didn't I?
I know.
I mean,
I agree.
And I've told them over and over again, pick up the phone. I don't
Gosh.
Even have to come to the White House. I can do it by phone. I can phone this stuff in if they just call me.
That's just rude.
Well, it just doesn't make any sense. It's a huge strategic error, Joan.
I can't disagree.
You'd think they would learn after all these years, wouldn't you?
It's tough.
So you don't buy the – well, you know, and of course, one of the things coming from where it comes from, the argument that Medicaid – or Medicare, I should say, is worse and we should tackle it, coming from the other side of the aisle from the proposers of Social Security reform, it actually has the bad luck of sounding like just somebody trying to muddy the water and confuse the issues.
Oh, bringing up Medicare.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it could sound that way, sure.
So my point is, even if their point is valid, the politics rears its ugly head, and the how we all perceive politicians rears its ugly head, and unfortunately, that may cause nothing to get done.
Well, especially there have been comments this week by the Senate Republican leader, not the Democratic leader, but the Republican leader, saying that Social Security reform may have to wait a year. And that kind of blew my mind, because if ever the president had a mandate to do anything, it's usually in the first year of the second term.
Right.
You wait a year and you've got problems.
This is a classic example of the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. The Republicans don't herd their cats up like the Democrats do. If this were a Democrat issue, whatever, they'd all be behind it. The
yeah.
Democrats are better at herding their cats than the Republicans are. Stand by, 20 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde.
Watching the tide roll away.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. Little Chicago for you there. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about Medicare and what kind of trouble they got there.
Yeah.
It's a can of worms, isn't it?
Sure is.
You guys predict that beneficiaries will pay more in the future through higher premiums.
That's right. And, you know, you got to overlaid on top of all this is the problem that people are having, the whole issue of retiree health insurance. You know, as you know, Medicare only pays 80%.
Right.
You've got that other 20%, which can be pretty high. So you've got private employers, and I can't blame them, trying to reduce the coverage to retirees.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are, you know, in their 40s and 50s now are looking ahead and seeing they may not have even that anymore. So Medicare becomes all that much more valuable to them as they retire.
Absolutely. Of course, you can get the supplemental insurance. You get the secondary insurance to cover the 20, I think, most of it.
Well,
anyway.
You can, but the problem is, as an individual, what are your premiums?
Yeah, no, that's the point, exactly. And also, but you guys also say, though, that the 2.9% payroll tax will not likely happen. An increase in that.
An increase,
deaths.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, so where do you go from here? I just don't know.
Joan,
say that maybe preventive care is the way to go, and that's part of it, certainly, but it's not the whole thing.
Well, and preventive care and modern medicine is doing, there seem to be, you know, three forces out there, Joan, and there's no way to know. It's not knowable right now, I think, how this will balance out. But the three forces are this, Joan. People are living longer thanks to the modern medicine. But the next generation of elderly, of which I am, you know, going to be one before too long, it's still going to be a while, folks. Don't worry. But that generation is going to be healthier than our parents were.
Right.
Because our lifestyle is healthier, I think. We've had better medical care as children and growing up. We're less likely to smoke, et cetera, et cetera. We're less likely to work in a factory and, you know, in dangerous jobs, that kind of thing. That's two things. But the other thing is the dividend, the health dividend. Is there a health dividend out there from the fact that we're healthier and that but then you throw in the fact that we're going to live longer and all that. You know, is there a health dividend that could make these Medicare projections off a little bit, make it not so bad? What do you think?
Well, I mean, you raise a lot of good points. You're right. I would like to think that the next generation will live longer and be healthier, but if they're going to live to be an older age, I would think that you still have end of life health issues,
mm-hmm.
and you also have more technology and more medications that can keep people alive longer, although they may be sicker. And so, you know, all this technology and all these new medications come at a price as well.
But, you know, Joan, there's another thing that we can throw into the mix, I think, and that's the productivity, for example, of baby boomers. You know, the GI generation, my parents, that group of folks, when they retired, many, many, many of them, most of them probably just really retired. And they, you know, they took their pension and they, you know, went off to the golf course or whatever, or the senior center or whatever they did. Now I'm not saying everybody did that, but a lot of them did.
No, but they
and
were probably
I think
anxious
the baby
to retire
boomers,
because they had tougher and more physically debilitating jobs.
Exactly, and also there wasn't the culture out there for those people to go and do other things, and also they had those defined benefit pension plans, which we don't have as many anymore.
Right.
So my point is the baby boomers. We're going to be healthier. I think we're going to be more productive longer. And I wonder if that could contribute to helping Medicare last longer. What do you think?
I could see that.
Wow, that's two agreements in a row, folks.
I'm
starting to get worried here. but the thing is, Joan, they're going to have to be some tough decisions. And Kiplinger points that out this week, that shoring up Medicare will demand tough decisions. And you know what, Joan? I just don't have a lot of confidence in our government making those tough decisions.
You don't?
What do you think?
Wow.
We need more. We're going to have more leaders up there to make the tough decisions and to do it the right way.
You need a leader who can inspire bipartisanship. And this is not casting aspersions on President Bush.
Yeah.
I think any leader is going to have a tough time being able to do that.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And
I think the last leader that was able to effectively do that was Reagan, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think you're right. Let's move over and talk about Medicaid, Joan. Tell us tell us the difference between Medicaid and Medicare.
Well, Medicare is an entitlement program, meaning that you're entitled to it no matter what once you turn 65 and enroll.
And it's
you
a health care program.
Right. Medicaid is only open to those below a certain those who are in poverty.
Now, regardless of age.
Right, and it may be that when you get to age 65, you're on Medicare, and you also may need Medicaid as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, this item is mainly about states which are struggling to control the cost of Medicaid, which is a joint program with the federal government. And it's been in the news a lot lately because the governors have been going through their annual meeting in Washington and discussing the Medicaid program with the president, because the president, of course, is trying to reduce the size of the budget, and he's trying to make cuts in Medicaid, but the governors are worried that the cuts may come at the expense of their state budgets.
and Medicaid is killing state budgets.
I have Keep a hard it straight
time.
Now.
I know the difference, but I have a hard time saying the correct name. Medicaid is what's hurting the states. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how much it's hurting them and maybe a possible solution. 29 after. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. Here's Robert Cray to take us out. Since I began broadcasting this show in 1997, part of my contract with you has been to introduce...
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the second year in a row.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blassingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. As Joan calls me, Mr. Wonderful, at your service. Joan, that's Joan Pride, by the way, if you're wondering which Joan I was talking about. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors.
I was misquoted.
That's what you call me, isn't it, Joan?
I was misquoted. I was
Joan,
taken out of context.
We're talking about Medicaid, and notice I got that right. And according to Kiplinger, 20% of states' budgets already go to Medicaid, and it's killing them, isn't it?
That's, and you think about how much 20% is. That's huge.
And it's not going down. It's going up, isn't it?
Right, exactly.
And with baby boomers... almost 80 million baby boomers, you know, coming of age with regard to, you know, the salad days, that's going to get worse, isn't it?
But you know what would be interesting? What I would like to know in terms of all of these numbers, what percentage of Medicaid goes to the elderly in nursing homes? Because as you know, once someone's in a nursing home, once they've exhausted all of their financial resources, they go on Medicaid. And there's no such thing as Medicare insurance for nursing homes.
Well, and see, it's not even, they don't even have to exhaust all their resources, because if there's a living spouse, they can go on to Medicaid a lot quicker.
Right.
And but they just have to divest of their holdings.
Right.
To do that. So
that's right.
That's an interesting one there.
Right.
And so it's but now you guys bring up something that I think is very interesting. You say that more and more people are encouraged to buy long-term care insurance. You know, that's a fairly new product, isn't it?
Yes.
And this is where you pay a premium in your younger days, like life insurance.
Right.
And whenever you if you have to go into a nursing home. I'm not sure if it. I'm not sure. I guess it covers, like a residential home, not just heavily, you know, like assisted living or nursing homes, but the domiciliaries or the, are some of those type of facilities, that whenever you need to go there, it will pay for that, or at least part of it, right?
I think so. That's right.
And if more and more now the good news for that is, I think for people is that. That you won't have to divest of your estate,
right?
And you can sort of pick and choose where you want to go, and you know that it's just a little better. It's a better situation if you have that kind of coverage.
Exactly.
But Joan, do you think that if more and more people are doing that, and I think the premiums are fairly reasonable, if more and more people do that, could that ease up the burden on Medicaid?
Well, again, you know, I'm just guessing that that's one of the big problems of Medicaid. It may be that there are a lot of other areas that are causing, you know, Medicaid costs to skyrocket. So I'm not sure if that would make a big difference, although I would think it has to.
Well, another thing, Joan, with regard to Medicaid, you know, more and more people are working these days and less people are on welfare, it seems to me.
Well, that's true.
And so, you know, as you know, Medicaid is for children who are in poverty as well,
right.
not just old folks.
Right.
And so, you know, if the economy continues to do well, but then you've got the immigrant situation, don't you? You've got the a lot of the folks who are coming into the country who are entering in basically an impoverished state. So
well, that's true.
It's a complicated issue, and it's one that's really hurting the states. And Joan,
right.
Do you know the number? Speaking of these entitlements, Medicaid, Social Security, Medicare, There's a number that I've heard, and I wish I could remember. You probably know this. And this is regarding how much of the federal budget this is, and that when they talk about, you know, shaving the budget here and there with regard to discretionary income, that even if they took all that discretionary off the table, we'd still be upside down because of the entitlements.
That's exactly what I've been saying for years, that you could completely eliminate the discretionary budget, and I'm saying defense too, and you'd still have a huge problem because you've got Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. Those are all things that the government is locked into.
Mm-hmm. And so what is that number? It's way over half. Yeah, it's a high percentage. I forgot what it is. It's something like, 70% or something?
Yeah, it's actually staggering. It's scary.
So Joan, there's, you know, based on what you just said, though, there's no question that we've got to figure out a way to solve these problems.
Right.
To develop some kind of a 21st century model that makes more sense for the 21st century, not these old 20th century models. We're going to come right back after these messages. We're going to talk about technology with Joan Pride. Stay with us. 22. We're back at 17:10. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest, and I encourage you to visit their website, ladies and gentlemen, kiplinger.com. If you'd like to know what's going on in the world out there and get a little more information than Joan and I talk about, and if you like some of the things that Kiplinger has to say, I encourage you to check out their website, kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. And you can also find out more about their publications, like the letter that the Kiplinger letter that Joan and I work off of every week. And that's the Kiplinger letter. It comes every week. And then there are three biweekly letters. Joan, let's see, the tax letter. That's a pretty good publication, isn't it, Joan?
Not bad, yeah.
And the agriculture letter, and then there, which is near and dear to my heart, having grown up on a farm.
Right.
And then the California letter. I had a joke there, but I'm not going to use it, Joan. The California letter, you got all three of those. Those are biweekly.
Yes, sir.
And then you've got this magazine thing.
Which is a monthly magazine. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
So you want it weekly, you want it biweekly, you want it monthly, they got it. Whatever you want. And you can subscribe there, but you can also make a phone call, can't they, Joan?
Absolutely. They can call our toll-free number, which is 800-544-0155.
And if you call that number and tell them I sent you, after they hang up on you and you call back, tell them that you want the 30-day free trial.
No, absolutely.
I don't think they'll hang. In fact, they'll say, oh, yeah, Jim, we know him. But you can get the 30-day free trial on the website, too. So check that out, folks, when you get a chance. Joan, let's talk about technology. What's the news on the tech world these days?
Well, let's see. Well, we're saying that PC buying is going to continue, but we're saying that the pace is going to, I guess, slow down a little bit and go to a more moderate pace. But
can we say PC without having to say what it is nowadays?
Oh, I'm sorry, personal computer. No,
I'm serious. Has that gotten into the lexicon enough that we can say PC without having to? Of course, there is another PC, political correctness. But
right.
I think don't you think everybody basically knows what a PC is?
Well, I guess so, but
20,
I don't mind.
25 years now.
You would think.
Yeah, okay. All right, go ahead. That just hit me. Go ahead.
Well, we're saying the increase in sales of PCs will be about 9% this year, which I think is not bad.
I think that's not too bad at all, considering
No, but we do say next year will be 5 to 6%.
Yeah. And why?
Well, because, you know, that sales have been so high the last couple of years, I think it will be time to sort of slow down because a lot of the replacement that has been going on will have occurred.
Well, the it went nuts in the 90s.
Right.
That was the heyday.
Well, that was all the Y2K stuff.
Even though
also.
The 80s was pretty good side. Well, but also the internet and all that and went nuts in the 90s. Then it slacked off a good bit. And then, Joan, yeah, and as you say, the Y2K thing happened. That changed a lot of things. And then there was a little, sort of a slowdown after that because people had over-designed and for Y2K.
Right.
And then then Wi-Fi came along.
That's right.
And so we can't really talk about PCs, it seems to me, without talking about laptops.
Well,
that's been the biggie. I mean, I bought in the 90s, I owned one laptop. No, two. I owned two laptops in the 90s. But in the 21st century, in this decade, I now have bought five or six laptops.
Well, and I'm actually a little surprised that we keep talking about PCs growing, because I would have thought that in a lot of cases you're converting people to laptops. I don't know.
Well, now as a PC, but see, I think when they say PCs, they're not just talking about desktop.
They don't just mean desktop.
No, I think they mean personal computers.
Okay.
But see, here's the other thing. You know, Joan, one of the things that some of my technology folks remind me about is, in the 21st century, you got to think of computers less and less as something with a monitor and a keyboard.
Right. Well, that's right.
And so even though, you know, a personal computer needs to have some kind of a screen and a keyboard, I now have a BlackBerry. And it has a screen, it has a keyboard, but it's not like a traditional personal computer.
You're really in the 21st century.
How about that? Yeah.
Much more so than me.
Well, see, and I can check my email so that if I'm away for the day, when I come back and I pull my email up on my desktop unit, I can read it better because the screen's bigger, but I already know what's come in pretty much.
Oh, I see.
So, because I've already checked it on my BlackBerry.
Yeah.
So what's the rest of the news? What about but you're saying that the double digits will return in 2007, the double digit growth in PCs. Tell us why.
Well, because there'll be a reason for people to want to buy new computers. We're saying Microsoft Windows will have yet another version of that software in 2007, so that will sort of spur more buying.
There's a code name. It's kind of a
Longhorn.
Clandestine name here.
Longhorn.
We don't want to ask what it's going to do.
Whatever that means.
Because we don't want to have to kill us. But you do have a little bit of information, Joe. Tell us about it.
Well, I think. Oh, you mean about dramatic advances?
That what it's going to do? It's going to lessen vulnerability.
That's right. And
to spam and
get more power, run more efficiently.
Yeah.
So, you know, stay tuned.
Well, the reason that's going to increase sales is because there probably are going to be some computers that won't run it because they're so old. So,
right,
folks, you're going to have to get up off your hip and buy a new computer.
Oh, no.
Well, and look at the speed of the darn computers these days. I mean, the last one I bought was 1.8 gigahertz. That's fast.
I don't know anything about this.
Compared to the first computer I bought 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
It's like the difference between lightning and lightning bug. It's like the difference between a tricycle and the space shuttle.
Okay.
In terms of speed.
Right.
It's unbelievable. Jones, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We've got more to come right after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We'll be back with us.
But when you're walking down that street, and you ain't had enough to eat.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, you got a section here on page 3 called Labor Woes. Why is labor woeing?
Is that woeing. A word? Well, I'll tell you why they're woeing. This is nothing new, but their membership has been dwindling, and they've seen their clout diminish. So they're trying to kind of reinvent themselves now.
What's the new labor going to look like? What's the new face of labor going to look like?
Well, I guess the word would be decentralization. I think you had the AFL-CIO gain more and more power, and now they're saying that union local and regional heads should have more power and keep the money locally, too.
Hmm. Now, that's a real change, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I think so.
That's a complete reversal from where they were a few years ago.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're just trying to hang on. I mean, I've been saying for years that one of the last examples of a dinosaur is unions in the United States marketplace.
Right.
I think it's, and eventually, I think that, you know, there'd be very few unions left except the government, which I think it's, I disagree with the government being, you know, government workers having a union. I think that's a mistake. But of course, you know how I feel about unions anyway.
Yes,
but,
sir.
But that's interesting. It is interesting to watch the way the unions are going, and it's something you might want to track a little bit, folks. Joan, let's talk about taxes. This is an area that you're one of our top experts in. What's the news in taxes?
Well, this is real interesting. There have been a bunch of court cases that have popped up around the country where businesses have challenged the IRS in collecting the federal long-distance toll telephone tax, because the law that started the tax many, many years ago based it on time and distance of the call. And as you know, a lot of companies and individuals have converted to cell phones, where distance does not play any part in pricing the call.
Right.
So they're saying the law is invalid, and they're winning. So, and a lot of businesses are starting to file refund claims. Now, IRS has held those in abeyance, but couldn't hurt to file a claim and get in line in case those refunds have to be paid.
So now, what would that claim be about? What?
Well, you would be claiming a refund of the telephone tax that you have paid.
How far back?
Well, that's a good question. I think it would depend on when you changed whatever your calling plan was, whenever you changed it to where it did not cover distance anymore.
These are cell phone taxes that are being...
I believe so, yes.
These are taxes...
Even a regular calling plan that has nothing to do with distance, you know, your landline calling plan.
So we're being taxed for distance on calls that are not where we're not being charged for distance.
But the problem is the law is outmoded, and I think Congress is going to wake up to this one of these days and change the law and bring it up to the 21st century.
Right. But in the meantime, you're saying there are people who are trying to get their money rebated to them.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that has to come from the government, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So the government has another hit to their budget.
Another IOU.
That's right.
Not good.
Okay, Joan, let's move over and talk about... by the way, you got a tax cut software package.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. I should have brought that up. Yeah.
Tell us about
makes your tax filing easier. We have a special price. It's only $19.95.
Just for my people, right? Just for my audience.
Anyone who can use the code G282 when they call the toll-free number.
Right.
Can I give you that?
Yes, please.
The toll-free number is 888-482-9288. And remember, when you call, use the code G282, and your price will be $19.95 plus $4.95 for shipping.
Anything I can do to help small business owners get a little bit less stress in their life, have a little less stress in their life by doing their taxes easier, I'm always happy to do. It's called Tax Cut Software.
Mike
Kiplinger, and give us that number, and let's just do that again so people
can
write
that
down.
Right. The toll-free number is 888-482-9288, and use the code G282 when they ask you for it.
And don't forget to tell them I sent you. Maybe they'll give you a 90-day, 30-day free trial.
Think carefully about that.
Yeah. Joan, let's move down on page 4 and talk about, we just got 30 seconds. Some reforms are impending at the United Nations. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what we're saying, but we're not saying that these will be major structural changes. I think they want
They got a sack of problems over there, don't they?
Right. They want to get rid of the cronyism and change employment practices, have a merit-based hiring system, you know, make things a little more objective. But, you can imagine the bureaucracy there, because we're saying there's 191 member nations. So
right.
It's difficult.
Well, Kofi Annan is not the guy to do it, and I predicted he'd be gone by the end of this year, and I still predict that. Mm-hmm. Joan Pride, thank you for being here. We'll see you in 2 weeks, right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Joan.
Thank you.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, with the Kiplinger editor. She'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.